London Calling, David here. I'm here with my friend Peter. Peter, why don't you explain to me where I am now and what am I looking at?
Hello, David. You are here in the heart of Paris, sitting on the banks of the River Seine on a gloriously sunny November afternoon, at more or less at the foot of the Eiffel Tower, with the domes of the Russian Church gleaming in the sun, the onion domes of the Russian Church gleaming in the sun, and the sound of the River Seine slapping against the banks of the river there at the departure port for the River Seine cruises.
So we can actually, if you listen hard, you can hear the Seine lapping slightly.
Yeah. Walking down here, we could hear the Seine slapping against the banks of the Seine, and the boat's about to leave any minute now, so we'll probably hear some more river activity.
And what about that bridge there? What's that?
Oh, the bridge is it's no interest at all.
It's no interest at all? It's all right, okay.
You'll have to give them the bridge. Well, it's a modern bridge that leads over to the Russian Church. We've got the Alexander III Bridge, which is a beautiful historic bridge just down on the left-hand side. But as we're on the western side of Paris, getting towards the exterior of the city, that's a more modern bridge, but one of the 35 or so that crosses the River Seine. And it's true that with the river flowing from east to west, you've got a fantastic history of the city through the story of its bridges. Yeah. That's for sure. But here we're at one of the least.
But there was a memorial there on that end of the bridge that I walked by coming down here.
Well, the bridge crosses a little island called the Island of Swans, the Île aux Cygnes, and at the end of that, there's a miniature, an eighth, I think, of the original size Statue of Liberty at the end of the island there, because we have three Statues of Liberty in Paris, one in a museum, one in the Luxembourg Gardens, and one on the island there. So,
wasn't there one to Diana? Did I see
one? Yes, on the edge of the bridge have a golden flame there, which is the flame that's become an unofficial monument to Diana, that marks the entrance to the tunnel where the fateful accident took place. Is a golden flame.
Right.
And that's called the Liberty Flame because it's an actual reproduction of the flame held in the torch of the Statue of Liberty. So
yeah.
What that's doing there, yeah.
All right, so now I've managed to draw you out a little bit and get it across. You know a fair bit about this wonderful city. You run Paris Walks. That's why you know so much about it. You're a brilliant guide. I shall never forget you standing outside of Notre Dame, and I suddenly understood that architecture because of a 6 or 7 minute talk you gave us. But let's back up. You're English or Cornish?
Cornish.
Can you tell us a little bit about... we'll get to Paris Walks, but what about you growing up and all of that? Tell us about... Let's hear the life story, Peter.
So I grew up in Cornwall, in the countryside, and loved the countryside and all it has to give, like any child lucky enough to grow up a mile or two away from the beach in a beautiful rural district. But you know, by the time you get to 16, 17, 18, there's something else that starts calling. And for me, it was the city, and not only the city, but something a bit, you know, exotic as well. And so I decided at the end of student days, I'd make a long weekend trip abroad to Paris. And that long weekend has turned into a 40-year stay, more or less. And so I love the city. It's a magical place, and I love the city and the culture and the language. There's, you know, plenty here to stay for. And after having stayed on 5 years or so, I met Oriel, and we spent a lot of time just exploring the city, learning about the city, studying. Taking classes at the Louvre. They run they have a school there where you can study art history. And of course, if you study at the Louvre school, they encourage you to take a guide's license, because they use so many guides at the museum. And so that seemed like something wonderful to be able to do. And once you start guiding, taking friends and family around, explaining things, and they find it fascinating and want more, you know, it led on to deciding to offer an English-speaking guiding service to a wider range of people than just friends and family, and that led to us starting the Paris Walks, really.
Yeah.
So
we're going to get into that in some detail.
Right.
But the whole business of courses, you've done several. You made a telescope, I think, didn't you? And you're a bookbinder.
Multi-talented. Like most guides, I think we're not specialists, we're generalists. And so I have a wide range of interests, and so I like making things, so a telescope and an organ. And
you made an organ?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
A barrel organ, typical. This is Paris we're in, yeah. So a barrel organ on which you can play all the traditional old French music as... One of the many things I've
where,
made.
Where
yeah.
did you? Where were you working on the telescope? That was a special place, wasn't it?
The telescope. I joined the astronomical club, which is based in the most historical building of the Sorbonne University, where they have their own observatory, and the telescope making facility is in the top of the observatory tower, which, as you obviously remember, we had the privilege to visit some years ago, and that's where the telescope lens came together slowly but surely after about 2 years of glass grinding.
I think you told me you were the only Englishman in the class. They were all French, is that right?
That's right, yes.
But they were very
absolutely.
Accepting, weren't they?
Yeah, very much so, yes. Like in all, Paris is a cosmopolitan city. I think there's always that, been that love-hate relationship, that friendly love-hate relationship between the English and the French. But wherever you go, you'll get a bit of ribbing, a bit of teasing, but you're generally pretty well accepted. And so as the eccentric Englishman that turned up to make a telescope in Paris, I was very well accepted. Yeah, I made a good telescope, and my lens was appreciated. And
happened to the telescope, Peter?
It's now set up in Brittany.
Oh, is it?
And because the light pollution is such in Paris that you can't really do any night observation with a telescope. So it's in the countryside, in the heart of the countryside.
I mean, the mind plays curious tricks. I thought the cat had pushed the telescope off.
Oh, there was a, no. There were, yeah, there was a, there were two occasions that my poor telescope, which took about 5 years to complete, right from making the lens to actually constructing the body of the telescope. In the several years I worked on it, it had a couple of mishaps, one of which was being pushed over by a cat, and the next it was stored in a garage underneath the apartment where they had a flood and the ceiling came down on it.
Yeah.
So it was starting from scratch again.
Yeah.
So yeah, had a few mishaps, but it's together, it's in Brittany, yeah.
And what about the bookbinding, Peter? Tell us about that.
Well, bookbinding is something else. That's always been a love of mine. And I had the wonderful opportunity to actually study the craft of bookbinding. And the art of bookbinding is a specifically French art. I mean, we find, obviously, bookbinders all over Europe, but the French have always appreciated craft bookbinding as an art form and have taught it in school here officially for a century and a half, I think, and that was the case in the UK, but I think the last official City and Guilds type bookbinding classes closed down in the probably 1980s in England, for example. So no chance to study here in Paris, where they have a school. I treated myself to a year off of work and signed up at school and did a full-time course in craft bookbinding and book restoration. Because again, as you know, I suppose that's like all of us guides, the interest is in history. So you like the new, but you like the old, and you want to preserve the old as well. And so Paris is the literary city, the great city of literature, the city of books, and a city who has a passion for bookbinding and creation. And so that was something that a project that came together some years ago.
And you're doing it professionally now in your spare time.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you're not restoring your country house in Brittany.
That's right.
And when you're not running Paris walks.
Exactly. Doing some bookbinding and restoration and doing it professionally. And that was a great joy because I've turned my hand to so many different things, like the telescope or other hobby crafts. But to the bookbinding, I decided that for once I wanted to, you know, go to school, learn the techniques, get a position as a trainee in a craft workshop and work with the old practitioners and really learn the, you know, the tricks of the trade and learn a craft and not just, you know, get by all the time. So that was a wonderful opportunity to actually master the art of bookbinding and feel at last that I was really competent in something.
And this, like the telescope making, this has connected you with Paris. You know, you are a Parisian, I mean, after all.
Yeah, after 40 years or so. Yeah, I'm as Parisian as any Parisian that's not French,
yeah,
I guess.
So let's go back to the guiding now. So you decided that you got the course, you did the course.
That's right.
And do you remember your first walk?
Yes, very much so. Yeah, Montmartre. Yeah, up in Montmartre. It was the first walk I learned and prepared. Very nervous. very nervous indeed. And but that area had been home for me. I'd been living in the area for perhaps 5 or 6 years, so an area I knew well, and is still as it was, you know, the little village of Paris, residential village. So I knew a lot of people up there, the shopkeepers on the main street and the restaurant, cafe owners and things, and so the nerves very quickly dissipated because, as you know, you're walking along with your people and people waving, saying hi, how are you, nice to see you. Yeah, the nerves melt away and you have nothing but the pleasure left of telling great stories and showing beautiful things. And so, yeah, the nerves melt away, I guess.
And did you call it Paris Walks right from the get-go?
No, originally we were Paris Walking Tours, and then a couple of years after we started, we met the London Walks, and because we developed that great relationship between us, and we were, you know, working towards the same goal and aim, and sharing, you know, visitors to Europe, it seemed sensible to kind of use the same name that the London Walks were using. So with your blessing, we Paris Walking Tours slowly but surely became Paris Walks, which made a nice pairing with London Walks. So let's, we kind of moved in the name.
Let's think about, say, a first time, let's say an American, a first time visitor to Paris, and could you make could you recommend a series of, what's the first walk they should go on, and then the second walk, and then the third walk? Let's set up a program of four walks
over a weekend. If you were new to Paris, and you hadn't been before, or you'd been before, and you wanted to more than scratch the surface, we would recommend at least three walks. It doesn't really matter what order you do them in, but I would always recommend a walk in the Latin Quarter, so you've got the heart of the left bank of Paris. That's its origins, with Roman Paris to medieval. And then on the right bank, we would recommend a Marais walk, because that's essential French history and one of the most beautiful historic architectural districts of Paris.
What's Marais mean?
Marais is the marsh. It's an old area that was a marshland on the right bank of the River Seine that grew up to become one of the most important historic residential
with a beautiful square,
the lovely Place des Vosges. So you need to see the Marais and the Latin Quarter to understand Paris, and then Montmartre, as I'd mentioned a little bit earlier on, and the village up in the north, which is home to the Sacré-Cœur, famous for its artists and its painters and its bohemian life. That's the Paris of Van Gogh, Gauguin, Cézanne, Toulouse-Lautrec, and the bohemians. And so if you've seen those three sections of Paris, then you've really got the essentials. And then there's a room if you're here for a few days, there's a room for a few other really interesting subjects, particularly if you come from the States. Then you might want to do Jefferson in Paris, or look at Jefferson and the story of Franklin, or the French Revolution, or the story of Paris during the First and Second World War, the occupation. There are a wide range of themes that you can cover that give you the major historical.
I mean, what about F. Scott Fitzgerald and Hemingway and all of that?
Well, of course, all of the writers, yes. So if you would, the Latin Quarter, the left bank of Paris, is so rich in history that you can divide it into themic walks, and it's a part of Paris you mustn't miss. And so, a Latin Quarter walk, we offer, five or six different themes there. And one of the most important is, of course, a literary theme, where you can go in the footsteps of Hemingway, and or Fitzgerald or Gertrude Stein, or, the other famous writers associated with the city.
There's one, I think, I don't know, it may have been me who called it this, or maybe it was you, the Peach Melba of Paris walks.
Always interested, that was the occupation, the Second World War visit that you requested, really, and that we prepared, and that has become extraordinarily popular and become, as you say, one of the Peach Melbas of the repertoire that covers the left bank of Paris. Paris during the occupation of the Second World War.
You and Oriol are going to do one, especially for Mary and me, in 48 hours.
Yes, about that. Yeah, so obviously our walks cover the general interest and special interest as well, and so on Saturday we'll take a look at the Paris of Marcel Proust. So this is a literary city par excellence. So you've got Fitzgerald or James Joyce or Gertrude Stein, but of course there's the boat about to leave. We mustn't forget the great French authors as well. Perhaps the hoot is going off in honour of the mention of Proust there, I think. And so we'll be on the footsteps of Marcel Proust, who wrote that massive body of work that's called A la recherche du temps perdu. So we'll be on the footsteps of Proust with you and Mary on Saturday morning.
How does Paris differ from the city I live in?
Well, you're probably the better placed person to answer that than me, because I don't know London I don't know London well at all. But I think, on my basic impression, Paris is much smaller. Paris is more condensed, easier to move around, easier to walk from one side of the city to the other. I think you can walk from the north to the south of Paris in 40 minutes, and from the east to the west of the city in about an hour and a half. It's a pretty small, it's like a town compared to London. So we've got things that are more closely packed together. You've got the exotic Mediterranean spirit, the cafes and the terraces and all the different cultural.
It's much more beautiful
traditions.
Than London. It wasn't bombed.
I wouldn't dare say that with you sitting opposite me. But more beautiful, certainly a different beauty, and very, obviously, historic. It wasn't bombed. But, of course, we had the Haussmannian clearance in the middle of the 19th century. So much of Paris was rebuilt, but a century before, I suppose, any blitzing or bombing that took place in London. So our rebuilding took place a century before the modernisation of London, I suppose. We've got that beautiful architectural harmony and symmetry and unity that comes from the city having been built, much rebuilt in one very short period of time, controlled or under the auspices of a very small team of men that shared the same idea. So you've got an architect and a financier and an urbanist and a town planner, a landscape gardener, who create the city in a short period. So there's perhaps a harmony and unity to Paris that doesn't exist in London, which has grown up in different areas at different times. As I say, you're the better place as knowing Paris as well as you do, and London as well as you do. You're better place to answer the question on the differences.
Nobody knows Paris better than you do. Peter, I was so charmed by this. You've probably forgotten this conversation. Many years ago, I asked you, why Paris Walks didn't do Ghost Walks. Do you remember what your reply to that was?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And it hasn't changed just because the, you know, the French is such a Cartesian nation. Yeah, you know, the ghosts just, we do not have ghosts in France. It is impossible to find a haunted chateau, a haunted castle, or a ghostly street in the city. So, unfortunately for us, no ghosts. And
the French are far too Cartesian
for ghosts. Yes, yeah. There's no
the ghosts all decamp to London, yes, to England.
Yeah, that's and yet they love her. I mean, you know, I love the story of ghosts. You know, they'll come to London. One of the first things I'm sure they want to do is go on a ghost walk. But they know that, you know, the city of Paris is not a haunted city. Yeah, so we don't have ghosts. Here at all, no. A little more in, if you go down to Brittany, where you've got the Celts, then you find a bit more of that kind of mythology. Yeah. But no, Paris is not haunted. We don't have a ghost in the Eiffel Tower. Can you imagine a monument like that that's not haunted to an Englishman? It doesn't seem possible.
And how about your team, Peter? They're like you. They all live in, they're all Parisians, aren't they? And they're all fluent in French. These are not 19-year-old college students who are given a script and told to memorize it.
No, that's a kind of condition that Auriel and I laid down when we started the walks, and it was just the two of us back in 1995 doing these English language walks. We decided when things took off and the walks, we could see that there was going to be a demand for them, and they were popular, and that we'd have to expand the team. We decided that we needed to work with mother tongue English speakers, and with people that really, you know, knew their subject and knew the city well, and that meant they had to have lived in Paris for a long time and be, you know, historians or trained in the past or professional guides. And it made it quite difficult to, you know, we set down criteria that were so tough that it was quite difficult to grow the team, because to find somebody that was either English and or American, who'd lived here for many years, who had all the right working papers and qualifications, was difficult. But slowly but surely, I think, you know, what we were doing drew in a group of fantastic people who, you know, came and knocked on the door and said, "Oh, we love what you do. We'd like to do that." And slowly but surely, we selected and built up the team we have now, and we've been going 27 years now. And I think the newest guide in joined us about 15 years ago. So
it's
an old team of guides that know each other well and that know and love their subject. And as you say, know and love their city, their host city.
You've got the wonderful laid-back Brad from...
Yes.
Who's a PhD.
Yes, absolutely.
Lived in London Paris for... Yeah. Well,
we have a much smaller team than you have in London Walks, of course, and I guess that's partly to do with the fact that, you know, we're in a country where you know, English is not the mother tongue, but we have a small and solid team. You have specialists, so we have Brad, who's specializes in the in particular in the history that links the States and France. So he'll be doing, you know, the Jefferson's Paris, for example. We have Chris, who's our paleontologist. He does, you know, a lot of ancient history, underground Paris, so sewers and catacombs being one of his favorite subjects. We have fashion specialists, we have food chocolate specialists,
and
the wine specialists. We have military specialists as well, in James, who's, First and Second World War, and a whole range of art historians and...
And something that makes it worth the price of admission all by itself is after the walk. If they want, you can make some good restaurant recommendations, good cafe recommendations.
Oh, yeah. No shortage of those in Paris. And of course, the guides are all gourmand. They know their good their restaurants and cafes, and they're always pleased to share. Obviously, the secrets of Paris and their inside knowledge with people that join us for the walks.
Yeah.
So there's always some good, you're never far from a good place to eat.
Yeah.
But it's not always easy to find, yeah, so a recommendation makes all the difference,
yeah.
I think. Yeah,
it's local knowledge
from,
again, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. This,
yeah.
It's absolutely priceless, isn't it? That's,
yeah.
And your visitors to London must find the same.
Yeah.
You know, the guides, it's local knowledge, yeah, inside knowledge that is so valuable. Yeah.
So you started back. I mean, COVID is worldwide, but
we've started back. Yeah. So we're doing daily walks at the moment, and we're running at present a morning program of walks. COVID oblige, really. We're asking people to call in and reserve in advance. Let us know that they'd like to come so that we can guarantee that the guide will be there. And we hope that slowly but surely, you know, from springtime next year onwards, we'll be able to get back to our original pattern of offering daily walks, several a day, where you can just show up. But we're not quite ready for that yet, but we're offering daily walks, yeah.
Okay, and so let's have the particulars now. What is the URL? What's the email address, etc.?
So if you want to get up to date on the program and get the latest news, and at the moment, as you say, with COVID and with changeability, it's always worth checking in on the website before joining a walk at www.paris-walks.com. Or if you're listening to David's podcast and you're familiar with the London Walks, you can link through the London Walks website, which is walks.com, www.walks.com, and or email paris@paris-walks.com, and somebody will always get back to you quickly with details of what's on the program. And you will find there a daily, at least one walk a day at the moment, with an opportunity to visit the Louvre and or the Musée d'Orsay once a week, with the daily schedule of walks that covers that little program that you asked me about. So if you're coming to Paris, even for a long weekend, and you want to get the basics, you'll be able to do a visit of the Marais, the Montmartre, and one of the various circuits we offer in the Latin Quarter, plus a few extras and specials that we're trying to run at the moment,
so
too.
So how far ahead do you know what you're... I mean, so for example, someone from Phoenix, Arizona, writes to you in December and says, we're going to be in Paris from June 18th to June 23rd. Will you know what walks you're doing approximately?
We'll know approximately. So we'll know we have a basic program of daily walks, and there will be extras if all goes according to plan. There'll be lots of extras on offer between now and June next year. We haven't planned out, you know, don't have the calendar of the extras set down at present, but there will be, you know, daily walks, and we know at least what one walk a day will be between now and then.
Yeah, and that couple in Phoenix who write to you and asking you about that stretch of time, they're going to get a very pleasant surprise when you reply, because it won't just be some walks recommendations, but you would say, I hope you're aware that on June 21st there's music all night in Paris.
Oh, that's right. Yes, completely. Yes. So you'll always get that little extra bit of information that helps you work your way around whatever's going on in Paris at the time. And like with London Walks, if you know you're coming to Paris and you don't find on our program exactly what you're looking for, well, of course, we're always there to help work out a private program for you, fix up a guide for you to do just whatever your particular interest is
as well.
We can do a tailor-made a visit as well for an individual or for a group that has a special interest as well.
Yeah.
And that's always, of course, a pleasure to do. And there's always someone in the office, like the London Walks, who'll get back to you very quickly with that inside information that will help you make the most out of a time spent in this beautiful city that we're so happy to call home.
Peter, there's a very fetching little English blonde sitting there.
I think she's looking at you, actually.
Could you step over here, young lady?
Bonjour.
Bonjour, madame.
Hi, Mary.
Bonjour.
Can you say hello?
Hello, hello from the Seine.
Should have been the banks of the Seine, it's, the sunny Seine.
The sunny Seine.
Mary and I are here with Peter. And Oriel, we've just had lunch with them. Paris. And Oriel's taken off, and I've got Peter to talk to us for a little bit. So.
Excellent.
Très bien. There you are, très bien. Yeah, what a gorgeous day it is. It's perfect time to be in Paris. I don't know where you are if you're listening to this, but you should be in Paris at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, if not planning a trip to the city. Yeah, it's fantastic.